4 hours later, after a painful ride through the darkness and the cold that goes with the nights at those altitudes, my father at last reached shelter. It was only with the utmost difficulty that the 6 peasants who had helped me carry him across the plain were able to hoist his folding bed up the rickety ladder that led to the sleeping quarters of the house in which we stayed. That first night was one of the worst Dad has ever experienced. The shock and exposure brought on high fever and frequent fainting. His shattered hip gave him the very devil. No position was comfortable. Sleep was impossible. It was a long gasping night of agony and worry in just about the most out-of-the-way spot you can find on this planet. Imagine being stricken in a land where the people don't believe in doctors, relying on the llamas to cure ills through herbs, incantations and ceremony. Next morning, Si Wong and I hiked to the Ralung telephone. A phone there was a lucky break, for only a few villages along the high road from Gangtok to Lhasa are connected with the one strand of wire that links the two places. I prayed that the line was not down, as it frequently is for weeks on end, and that the Indian Army doctor at Giants could come to the rescue. It was almost a matter of life or death. Without a doctor to splint Dad's leg, I could see no way ever to get him home. The phone lineman managed to rouse Giants after much shouting and blowing into the ancient battery-driven outfit. Though Giants was only 33 miles away, the connection was so poor that everything had to be repeated 3 and 4 times before it was understood. Nevertheless, we finally reached Rai Bahadabrahendra Chandrapal, the Indian Army doctor. Si Wong, talking to his brother, a clerk at the Indian Trade Agency at Giants, made our plight known, and Captain Pal agreed to come if permission were granted by the Tibetan government. Like all his Indian colleagues, the doctor was allowed to go only 7 miles beyond Giants, the terminus of the Indian mail system. Special authority was necessary to proceed farther into Tibet. Happily, the Tibetan Trade Agency gave the nod and the good doctor, one of 4 in Tibet, made a forced march from Giants to reach Ralung in one day. Never was there a more welcome sight to my dad and me than the appearance of the young uniformed Indian, cheerful and smiling in spite of his strenuous all-day ride, when he climbed up the ladder and greeted us at 9 that night. Without an X-ray machine, there is none in Tibet. Dr. Pal could not tell definitely whether Dad's hip was fractured. He explained that medicine, not surgery, was his field. Also, that he had had no chance to complete his medical training before he was drafted into the Indian Army. As a matter of fact, only one of the 4 doctors in Tibet is a medical school graduate. However, after preliminary examination, Dr. Pal said that the injury might be only muscular torn ligaments and a severe sprain. This was reassuring, and we decided to press on to Giants as best we could. The British explorer Edward Amundsen once said, "The whole of Tibet is like a sea, the gigantic waves of which, driven up by northern and southern winds, have been changed to stone at the moment of their worst fury." That's the terrain we faced for 3 days, and we'll remember to the end of our lives. It sometimes took 10 Tibetans to carry Dad's stretcher over the steep rocky trails, which skirted chasms and swift streams, moving at a snail's pace to keep him from plunging into the river far below. Strapped to the stretcher, with his leg in a splint, Dad roasted when the sun was out and nearly froze when it ducked behind the clouds and the cold winds blew up. The first night, at Gobshi, we had to borrow Tibetan tents, sleeping out in the cold. A detachment of soldiers had arrived just ahead of us and taken over all available space in the village. In Tibet, no one dares raise a finger to the soldiers, who are accustomed to make up their deficit in salary by helping themselves to anything they fancy. The next night we were more fortunate, with real beds charpis at the home of Gigm Tering, a Tibetan country gentleman whom we had met in Lhasa. He had invited us to make his house on the Giants Road a stopping place on the way home. On the third day we reached Giants, and the Maratha garrison, where the quarters seemed like paradise after those grim days on the trail. Dr. Pal and Captain Ramchandra Patil, the commanding officer of the Maratha detachment, were exceedingly cordial. During our 10 days with them, their hospitality was unbounded. Dr. Pal watched over Dad as he lay on one of their few Indian-style beds. Incredible though it now seems, after about a week on his back, Dad managed to walk on that badly fractured leg. Assisted only by a cane, he slowly and painfully could stagger from his room to the mess hall some 20 yards away. I think it was sheer willpower and guts that enabled him to walk on that limb, with the femur cracked in 8 places. However, at the time, this effort fooled us into concluding that the leg was not broken, and we made plans to continue on to civilization. An early return was mandatory, too. Soon deep snows would clog the Himalayan passes and we might have been marooned until the summer of 1950. How about having a plane come in to alley us out? This was impossible. The best we could do was to fashion our own magic carpet for Dad, a stout wooden sedan chair, to be carried on the shoulders of Tibetans. 2 weeks after Dad's losing argument with the horse, we hit the trail for home again. And it was a long trail, too. It took us 16 days to cover the 200 or more miles from Giants to Gangtok, averaging 1 to 2 miles per hour. Fortunately, we did have a medical man with us most of the way. Dr. A.I. Bohadabo, a middle-aged gentleman, was not a graduate doctor but he had studied and practiced medicine quite a bit. He accompanied us the first day out of Giants to check on Dad's condition after 10 hours of bouncing along the trail. The next day Dr. Pal caught up with us on his way to the Indian troops stationed at Yatung. He stayed with us to within 1 day's march of Yatung, and relieved our anxiety with nightly medical checkups. The Tibetans, in teams of 4, carried Dad's sedan chair. As they plodded along they chanted or sang to keep in step. Sometimes it was Om Mani Padme Hum, the familiar prayer to Buddha, which they chanted over and over again. More often, though, they sang a ditty that may be translated as, O Lord Buddha, lighten our load. Another thing he could not escape was the continual bounce, bounce, bounce off his wooden litter. Luckily, we had an air mattress with us which we inflated and placed in his chair. But still this did little toward lessening the pain during that bumpy hair-raising journey. At times, Dad had to leave the chair and hobble around sharp turns in the trail that were too abrupt for the coolies to manage with their burden. In some places the path was so narrow that they had to tip the chair on edge to make their way along a canyon wall. Dad managed to keep his sense of humor, though, and tried to teach the Tibetans new songs. At other times he chanted with them. And at night, in his fitful sleep, he kept on chanting, O Lord Buddha, lighten our load. This prayer was answered too, for on that journey Dad lost 20 pounds. At Yatung, on the 5th of October, we were met by a rescue team sent out by Loy Henderson, United States Ambassador at New Delhi, with the cooperation of the Indian government. It consisted of Royal Bisbee, a member of our embassy staff, Fmali Bateman, a health officer from the embassy, and Major A.K. Bose, one of India's leading combat surgeons. Naturally, we were overjoyed to see them, even though we had just about done our own rescuing, and at Yatung we were only a few days from Gangtok. It is impossible to find words to express our gratitude to Ambassador Henderson, the Indian government and all the others who came to Dad's assistance. As if the rescue team was not enough, the United States Air Force ordered a plane to the nearest airfield to help with our evacuation if necessary. At Siliguri, just south of Gangtok, the American Air Attaché Tilda Copyright to India picked us up in his C-47 and flew us on to Calcutta. From there to America it was no problem. We flew halfway around the globe in the same amount of time it takes to hike 40 tortuous miles in the land of the Lamas. Once home, no time was lost getting Dad to a hospital, where his leg was operated on successfully. His right femur, which had begun to knit improperly during the month since the accident, was rebroken and properly set. All through the winter and until May Dad was on crutches. But in August, less than a year after the fall, he was able to ski in Alaska on the Juneau ice cap. Our fabulous trip to Lhasa came to an end officially when, on behalf of both of us, I delivered a scroll to President Truman. Receiving me in his office at the White House, the President asked about our journey. So I spread a map before him and pointed out the route we had taken. Mr. Truman studied it for a moment, sighed wistfully and said that he had long dreamed of visiting Lhasa, but that he probably would never have the opportunity. The message I turned over to President Truman had been handwritten in Tibetan characters with a bamboo pen on parchment made from the bark of the Tibetan tree. It was dated the 16th day of the 7th month of the Earth Bull Year, September 7, 1949, and read, "Now that Lowell Thomas, Sr., and Lowell Thomas, Jr., have been able to visit Tibet, they are well acquainted with all facts about this country. Therefore, the government of Tibet hopes that from them the President of the United States, the people of America, and those who live in other countries as well, will soon come to know more about Tibet. That it is a holy, independent country, a religious country, ruled over by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, who is the true incarnation of Chenrezig, the Buddha of Mercy. Furthermore, that all Tibetans, including the civilian population as well as the monks, are entirely devoted to religion. We have learned that unfortunately, throughout this world at the present time, there is an absence of peace and happiness. This because of troubles between peoples, and disturbances and conflicts of many kinds. We, the government and people of Tibet, are much worried, deeply concerned over the present state of the world in which we all live. And we are eager to have it known that here in Tibet, a land that is especially dedicated to religion, all of our peoples, both lay and monk, are earnestly praying that God will grant happiness and everlasting peace to all humanity." The end of extracts. This book had lots of pictures in color and black and white, and many captions may be included here. To see the pictures page by page, use this link. https://archive.org/details/gle.paha.2931/page/259/mode/2up. View equals theater.